history interview for we, the team leader of Sana 50, Antoine Andragales, somewhere in the 40s, early 40s. It's today. My first question to you would be, why did you decide to go? Was it a decision? Were you asked?
It was a decision from my side initially. It's been a boyhood dream. Always wanted to go, right from school days. Read all the explorer books, read everything there could be about the Antarctic. And then, just the way life takes its turns. I couldn't go because of various commitments to family and studies. And so it's been shelved. I think there's a period in your life when you can go, which is maybe straight after university or school, and then there's a period in your life when you can't go. And I've just emerged from that. My children left home a few years ago. My wife has taken on a whole new career, which she's very interested in, and she needs a good year on her own to get that launched. And I'd reached a point of being 50 in my life when I realized that if I didn't do this, it might not happen. So, all those factors came together. And I then approached the Department of Environment and Tourism and put in an application, which got accepted. And I didn't realize it would. I was actually quite shocked.
So you applied directly to the DA? You didn't apply via source? Or...
No, what happened, I didn't really know how to apply. And initially I actually phoned up Don Pinnock, who had written the book, and said, Don, I really want to go. I didn't know him. Introduced myself to him and said, I really want to go down to the Antarctic. I had no idea of being the leader. I wanted to go down in a scientific capacity. And I'd done my degree, in honours degree in climatology at UCT many, many years before. So the DEET said to me, we'll make application to the South African Weather Services and come down as the Met officer. And from that, getting that post and becoming the Met officer, the DEET then asked me if I'd take on team leadership as well.
So. Was that a decision you had to ponder over, or did it come quite easily?
I didn't think of it for a moment. I was honored to get it. And took it on straight away. I'm not sure it's been a good idea after all. There's a lot of responsibilities. But no, it is a good idea. And I feel it's a privilege.
You said that it has been a boyhood dream. You've read the books. How were you exposed to the books? Was it from school? Was it your parents?
That's an interesting question that I've never thought about. There was one book that my mother gave me, which was this deciding factor in what you just said. It was the book, the Civilian books, the big, I forget how to label it, but Edmund Hillary and Vivian Fuchs Crossed the Antarctic.
Transantarctic.
And I never read the book. My mother gave it to me, and it was the pictures in the book of the cats crossing the crevasses. It never left me. And even when I see those same pictures today, it still just jolts me back to being 15. And I'd say that book and those photographs in that book are absolutely triggered it to me. Became imprinted.
In terms of preparation, what does the team leader have to do?
There hasn't been much preparation that the team leaders had to do other than that's different to what the team has had to do. Most of my work has been similar to the team, other than right at the beginning, the department did sit me down for about a 3-hour introduction into the protocols and the routines, and they gave me a massive big manual which I took home and started to study. So along with studying for my particular job of being the weatherman down there, I then had to look at what the team leader had to do. And other than reading the manuals and familiarizing myself with what my duties would be when I got down there, there wasn't too much more preparation I could do. I had to write letters to the various team members welcoming them, because they were all in different parts of the country at that time, and telling them who I was and what my expectations were from them over the sort of 3-month run-up period. I had to also contact their families and loved ones and tell them that I was the team leader and that they needed to contact me.
Was that part of your job?
It was part of my job to contact the families and the nearest of kin just to say who I was. I was the leading, I was the team leader. If they needed to contact me, they could do so, and ask them to send gifts down to me for Christmases and birthdays. So I had a few of those duties to do. But I think the main duty for me was, the other big duty was sponsorship. I had to get onto that. We had to try and get our team to have a logo, some T-shirts, some extra food and chocolates, some extra wine and booze.
How do you go about that? I mean, what is, if someone sponsors you, say for instance wine, what do they get out of that?
Okay. Now, firstly, there's a strict protocol that the DEET put in place that we could only apply for sponsorship as a team, SANI 50, and that it wasn't the department applying for sponsorship. So there was a differentiation between that. And then in terms of what we as the team could offer back to the sponsors, we could offer them photographs for limited usage in-house in their organizations, but not for general media publication. We could offer them visuals on our websites, on our newsletters, of their logos. I offered each of them a sort of slideshow talk when I returned. And then gear testing. We've got lots of gear from First Ascent and from people like Garmin and people whose equipment we can actually run out there and test, mountaineering equipment from Outward Ventures. So we offered them gear testing, which we're going to put on our blogs and websites and show them and tell them how we feel their equipment's handy.
You have some background in adventure tourism, though.
Yeah.
What kind of background do you have?
Well, sort of my whole life has been dedicated to some form of adventure. I mean, if I was to sort of label myself as a, I don't know if I kind of been an adventurer, an explorer. It's been a lot of rivers and surf skiing, long distance surf skiing. I've gone around Cape Point 5 times on races. I've done the race from Port Elizabeth to East London, which is the longest surf ski race in the world. I've climbed in the Alps. I've climbed in the Himalayas.
So do you think this gave you some sort of background knowledge when it came to outdoor gear and to...
Definitely. It gave me the credentials to be team leader to a certain degree, because I've done a lot of expedition leading. Secondly, when it came to gear itself, I kind of had some idea what we should be looking for. Not that we're going to be taking on any high adventure here in the Antarctic as such, but that I needed to know, and I do know what the kind of appropriate gear is to wear. And so, my background has helped a lot in that. Yeah.
Have you had contact with any previous team leaders?
Mainly Team 49, the current team. Andre Holmes has been amazingly helpful. In fact, Andre has been my biggest source of input of information, without a doubt. And I think if anything a team leader can do, that's to feed back from the SANI base to the next coming guide. That's a huge help. Because the DEET are very, very involved in their personal work, not personal work, but their functions, and they don't have a lot of time to spend on us. And I feel as team leader, there's no point in sitting back and saying, oh, the DEET doesn't want to help me or can't answer these questions. You've got to get on with it yourself and find a source. And Andre was my source. So I spent a lot of time on the emails. I haven't spoken to him yet. Never managed to call him up on the phone, which is quite weird. Every time I phone Santa, he's out somewhere. Or busy. But Andre's been great, and he's given me a huge amount of input from like what gear to bring, to what food, to what extras, and how to hold the team together. And I've had talks with other team leaders on board this vessel now. I've been speaking to team leaders, just getting input. And around South Africa, I've spoken to one or two. Yeah.
The cabotage duties on the base, you're going to be the head meteorologist?
Yeah, so indeed, they call me the senior meteorologist, but there is only one at SANI, whereas at like Gough and Barry, I think there's more. The work we do is observational, not forecasting, and that's quite strictly defined. It would be illegal for me, under my qualifications, to do any forecasting or predictions for either this ship or aviation. If that gets called for, they will refer to the South African weather services and to the forecasting experts back in South Africa to make forecasts for Sanai and the Antarctic. So I can't do that. What my job is to do is to observe current weather, record it, and to make sure that it's documented and sent in on time. And that's very much current weather as it's happening. Temperatures, humidities, clouds, cloud heights, cloud types.
Now, how are you going to work this? I mean, if you're the only meteorologist, are you just going to down to do nighttime observation?
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of it's automatic weather station driven. So we've got the AWSs, the automatic weather stations. They will do a lot of the work. It will do a lot of the work. I have to do the observations. Nobody can look at the. You know, I've got to look at the clouds. But we work from the first observation, 600 GMT, and we run observations hourly through till 1200 GMT at lunchtime, basically. So the mornings will be very busy. Then there's a long gap until 1800 GMT when I do another observation, and then that's the final observation for the day.
The time at Sanaa, are you following GMT time anyway?
That's to be decided. I would like to follow GMT time, and I think that during handover, Sanai will be on GMT, I'm pretty sure. A lot of my team members have asked if we can go back to South African time when everybody leaves. The reason they want to be on South African time is so that it's easier to correspond with people back at their universities and back at the DEET. So that's to be decided, and I'm not sure what the protocol is.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know. Is it something that each team can sort of arbitrarily decide?
I don't know yet, and that's something that I need to also find out. So otherwise, if it's by rule, I'm sure it's going to be GMT, which is where we are. We're 2 degrees west, so GMT is the most appropriate.
It is the most appropriate, I know you struggle to get some of the team members. What do you think is the reason for that?
I don't have any fixed... I don't have any formal reasons for it. I mean, I haven't been able to find out indeed why. The team members we struggle to get have been from a technical background. It may have something to do with the pay that's on offer in the competitive sense, that I think there's a lot of work out there for technical people in South Africa, in the world at the moment. You know, we're a resource-driven world. The demand for mining, the demand for resources is such that mechanical engineers, electrical engineers are in such demand around South Africa, mines and so on. I think these guys can get jobs anywhere. And I think that's my best answer to it. Yeah. And I think also there could be the factor that it's quite a commitment to go away for 14 months. And it may not be everybody's, especially when you look at the more technical side. I think the scientists and the engineers, they're more sort of driven for this adventure. But when it comes to technical people, they might say, well, I don't need that adventure. I'm actually, you know, on a job and want good money. And I think that's a factor in it as well.
Do you know if these have a plan B instead of flying people on number 99?
The plan B was to fly them in on the last flight if possible, February. That would have happened there. So they still had a few months. It's been perfect to get them on the ship because we're able to incorporate them into the team a little late, but get them sort of part of us. But at the very worst, we could have held them until changeover and got them in on an air flight.
The two team members that came, did they apply initially when the calls for applications first went out, or were they sort of sourced?
I actually don't know, Lisa. You have to check that. I think that they were more sourced. I actually don't know. I haven't found that out from them yet.
Are there any worries in your mind that they haven't been part of the team training?
Yes, I am worried about it. Certainly the team gelled on team training. It was a unifying experience. When we got together, we started firefighting or driving the cat challenges around the yard in Belleville. Yeah, we had fun. We had meals and we got together. And that certainly brought us into being a coherent unit. Now we've got the two new members. Life is making the best of the situation. And I don't expect anything down in the Antarctic is going to be perfect according to plan. And I think that the Antarctic is naturally going to throw things at me and at the team anyway. And this is the first of such things. So I see it in that light. But in answer to your question, it's certainly not perfect. Yeah.
And the team at the Eye Service, quite diverse in terms of generations, in terms of cultures, in terms of languages. Are you going, do you have a special plan in place for that, or are you just going to play by ear?
Play it by ear, I think, would be the way. If there was a plan, it would be just to be aware of it, which I am, to be open-minded about it, to realize that that's our world, and tolerance, consensus decision-making, democratic work. While still understanding that I'm going to have to bear the brunt of responsibility as team leader, I'm somehow going to have to open this up democratically to understand, look, we've got, we've got black and white, we've got different religions from Jehovah's Witness to Catholic to Anglican, we've got Afrikaans and English culture. The potpourri of South Africa, isn't it?
It is.
It is.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's one of the most diverse teams.
And we're maybe. And we've got girls and boys. We've got men and women, So, and I'm glad for that because I think an all-male environment down there would have been it just brings another element into it.
Yeah.
I kind of embrace that. I think let's go with it. Let's deal with it because that's what life's about. Yeah. But no, I don't have a strict plan on it. No, I can't say.
What do you foresee will be the big challenges of Antarctica?
The big challenges will be, foremost in my mind, confinement. Stuck in the Antarctica first. Secondly, stuck in the base through winter without being able to get out. And the darkness. I think those are my big concerns and challenges. And then we move into the challenges of getting the job done, and I suppose the psychological aspect of being able to keep focus and keep your work going in that environment. That's the big challenge for me. When that ship leaves in February and we're on our own, it's a long time. That's quite daunting. So I find it a big challenge. Obviously, other challenges for me would be holding the team together. This is naturally a bunch of young, energetic people. They're not going to the Antarctic to play tiddlywinks. They want to explore. They want to be part of it all. There's a lot of people who want to be out in the nature. At the same time, the DEET have got protocols and rules. And if I'm too strict and I don't let them have some fun, they aren't going to become psychologically incapable of doing things. So I'm going to have to really balance that one in between protocol and official requirements and just making sure everybody's able to enjoy themselves within the limits of safety.
This team leader manual, do you think that manual changed after the recent events? Could you see changes in the manual?
I didn't see the manual before, but we got a strict formed sign to say that we may not do this, we will not do that. The department will not take responsibility for the other. In terms of any outdoor adventure, whether it is skiing or going down a crevasse,
snowboarding,
or any of these crazy adventures, and any what they considered extreme sports. So we've all signed that document, and I think the department's had to tighten up. And I mean, I understand that it would be natural that they would. They've got to do that, and at the same time, I still stand by what I said, that I've got to keep the team suitably occupied and entertained, but I think as team members, safety would have been my number one consideration anyway, with or without the protocol from the department. There's no ways I would put ourselves into any situation of risk. I'm certainly not voluntarily on a so-called recreational expedition, so I hardly needed the guidance of DEET for that in any case. Yeah.
And you have previous expedition experience, so you would know what can be risky. In terms of the team manual contract, do you get life insurance or medical cover from the department?
No, as far as I understand, we covered for workers' compensation only, and that requires that the injury happens in a working capacity. So if we're injured doing something else, we're not covered. For that, those of us who've got medical aids have been encouraged by the department to keep them. If anything should happen outside of work, we are going to have to pay for our own medical, yeah. And that might include evacuation. Had a massive bill on the aeroplane.
So, did you inform, do you have medical aid cover?
I do personally, and everybody's been informed that if they did have, they should retain it. Yeah. Which is
so
expensive.
Have you informed your medical aid?
Yeah, my medical aid is Discovery, and on previous expeditions when I've gone away, I've told them I needed extra cover for certain things, and I've applied often for expeditionary cover. In this instance, I actually requested to downgrade my cover because I simply can't use it for 14 months. And I'm not going to be making doctor's visits, and for six of those 14 months, I can't get there anyway, irrespective of what happens. And they've been amazing. I mean, they actually came, and then they initially, they also didn't look at the thing that where you're going, like, are you just going skiing in Europe? Then they came back and said, okay, this is a kind of special case, and they've agreed to downgrade me to a lower premium and will upgrade me immediately on return without me underwriting, which I think was quite good of Discovery, yeah. But that didn't happen talking to the standard consultants on the phone. It required a little bit of drilling down into the system or drilling up to get the right supervisory level.
Did they actually read what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah, they didn't say. They're not the normal run-of-the-mill, yeah.
You're leaving a wife behind?
I'm leaving my wife behind, my two children, but my two children have left home now, so they're not really, it's not that direct on them. My wife has always been incredibly supportive of any adventure. She's been there on some of them with me, obviously not on this one. And she supported it wholeheartedly, and she does. It got hard towards the end, with the reality being 14 months. But I think I mentioned earlier that, you know, both of us have reached an age now. I'm 51. She's 46. She's just embarking on a new career in psychology. She's quite focused on that. So she's got a lot of work ahead of her.
And she started studying in psychology?
She just finished studying as a counselor with the Applied School of Psychology. And so she's now working as a consultant and psychologist. So she's pretty busy, and she's got her focus. And I think it's entering that time in your lives in a relationship where you can say, look, you know, we've done the children, we've been through getting all of that up and going, and, you know, a lot of the house is sorted. What are we going to do next? And this kind of opens up new doors. And if you can see it like that, with a firm intention that you're going to get back together at the end of it, that this is not the end of the marriage, but it's rather the growing of the marriage,
yes.
In a way, into a new thing. That's the way we've both seen it. And so she's been amazing.
It's a stimulating experience at your age to go away or experience something very new, so you don't get into that sort of middle age crisis. Mode.
Well, there's two choices. You either buy the Harley or you find the new wife who's sort of like 25. What if you do when they reach that age, you know?
Maybe I'm talking to
you. Yeah, so I have to pick an option. And that's not to say I'm not going to miss my wife, but
no.
We're not.
What's this?
And I think it would be very hard at the age of 30 to leave a loved one behind for like 40. I think it could be the end of the relationship, but it's probably different. I don't speak for everybody, certainly for myself and Mallory, it is.
Is there any of your team members who are leaving small children behind?
Alan, who's just joined us, is leaving a very young child behind, and I spoke to him about that briefly. I haven't had much chance to talk to him, but I think it must be a big issue to leave a 6-year-old behind. His kids are mostly a little bit younger than mine, but they're up and going. They're not that young.
Sort of high school.
High school and university age. So no, I think most of them have not got, and the rest are quite young.
Yeah.
Haven't got children yet.
Oh,
well,
I'm sorry. And you've also got a married couple joining you.
Yeah, I mean that's interesting. We've got Kevin and Beatrice, and from what I understand, you know, the two women on a trip down there could be quite hard work because they become quite competitive if they sort of unmarried. And that's what I've heard said. But one married couple, one married woman and one unmarried woman takes the sort of sting out of it. I think it's a challenge for Beatrice and Kevin to be down there married. I'm not sure I'd like to come down here married with my wife for 14 months. But Yeah, they seem to do a lot of things together. They've been in the Air Force together. They've trained together. They've worked together. They're both in the same field from
That's
the HMO. And in some ways, I think it's quite nice for us as a team to have a married couple down there. It's a bit
stability
of family.
Yeah,
stability. Yeah.
Do they have married quarters in Sinai?
If they don't, I think they're going to definitely have to have it. I mean, they don't have married quarters. I think over changeover, they might not get their own cabins together. But certainly when we're alone at the base, they'll
get together. Otherwise, we'll construct.
We'll construct,
make,
yeah.
Make a married quarter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. I will talk to you again.
Okay.
But for now, that's it.
Good.
Last question, just who are the persons you work most with at Deep?
At DEET, okay. I mean, I've worked a lot for the services.
Who was mostly in charge of the team logistics?
I think Gideon, there's been, I don't know who most, I mean, it's been a group of, Gideon's been very involved with us. Ashley, to a certain extent, has been involved. And I think Henny Smith has been very closely involved with us. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the publicity and making sure we know where to be at what time for certain sort of ceremonial events. So those are the three people that I've been closely associated with.
Did you get the freedom of the city after all?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay.
Not the freedom of the city, no. When you say did we get it, what does that even mean?
I don't know.
No, we did a procession up Adderley Street. One cold winter's night. I think it was more cold with the training. The southeaster came pumping through and we were frozen in our t-shirts. And we went to the cathedral and we got blessed by the bishop. And
how many people were at the cathedral?
About half the team could make it. It was the last weekend, so a lot of members had gone back to see families. But half of us made it. It's quite a lovely experience, actually. We got the front rows and we went up and the bishop blessed us. It was quite emotional, so that was quite a nice experience.
Was it an interfaith experience? Or
it wasn't really, it was more Anglican. But yeah, it was fairly sort of open faith service, and I enjoyed it. They sang hymns for us, they wished us well, and it was great. I think it was great.
Did Johan attend?
Johan didn't attend. I'll tell you who attended. It was the doctor and myself and Ruan. That was the three, and then the chaplain was there, although he's not part of the team. We were sadly a little bit underrepresented on that, but it wasn't made compulsory, and a lot of people just had their own agendas, and there were some people for religious reasons that didn't want to go to the cathedral, and you can't force them.
Yeah, well, this is a cathedral. Do you know if, but I'll also ask him that, Johan might have any special requirements for this? Did he put in special requests
to you? He speaks to me from time to time about what he does and doesn't want to do. He won't attend birthday celebrations. Firat's birthday was on 2 nights ago. We had a birthday cake and a happy birthday. Johan excused himself from that because I think that's Jehovah's Witness protocol.
Blood transfusions here.
And then he won't be on for blood transfusions at all. So he takes that. Excuses himself from that. He's asked me if he could be excused from the 70 degree south polar Dunkin' or whatever we call it. And yeah, so I mean, I've said to him, yes, that's his choice, he doesn't want to be involved. You know, so be it.
Yeah,
so those are the three main things he's excused himself from me. I think they'll come one at a time. He hasn't given me a list of them. And then the cathedral, I think the reason he didn't come was because it didn't tie in with his religious standing as a Jehovah's Witness. But for me, you know, that's also the challenger. I mean, we tend to see the Jehovah's Witness as being somebody that knocks on the front door. You know, hell, to go and spend a year with somebody, well, you know, it's longer than, you know, it's, you know, closing the front door. So I think it's an opportunity to learn what is it that makes them tick.
I mean, he also comes with a bit of experience, having been unmarried.
Absolutely.
Do you think that will help the team in some way?
I think it's already helped to a certain degree. He certainly got knowledge of what the expectations were to be on things that people couldn't answer, like what do we want on the Agalas? What will life be like in 3 weeks? He's been there. He hasn't been to Sinai, so he can't help us there.
Yeah,
but he's had the confinement. So yeah, he's been helpful already to that, to that side. So definitely.
Yeah.
Good to have that experience.
But he's only experienced undergoing experience on my own elbow.
Yes, he's the only guy who's been involved in any form of involvement with the SANA program and been away for a period of time. So, yeah. So we can draw on him.
Is he deputy team leader?
He's deputy team leader as well. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's my deputy.
Thank you.